Welcome to ATS Mix.
And I think until you start asking questions, you know, you're just going to buy whatever's offered to you on the 6 o'clock news.
ATS Mix.
This isn't a talk show, it's a freak show.
From AboveTopSecret.com.
But also be skeptical of the people who are out there selling conspiracy theories.
The Internet's most popular conspiracy theory discussion board. ATS Mix from AboveTopSecret.com.
In the name of Christ, just let us in!
Starts now.
It is the ATS Mix, and I'm Johnny Anonymous.
I'm Dave Rabbit. How you doing, John?
I'm doing real good. You know what we got on the show today?
Tell me.
We've got Clifford Stone from the Bay Area UFO Expo.
Oh, man. Love Clifford.
You know what else we got?
What?
We've got a very special Skeptic Overlord show. It's not going to be a Skeptic Overview, although I think we'll probably use the same intro for that.
Oh, you think maybe we can hum a special one for him, maybe?
That would be fun, yes.
We can try that.
Yeah, we can try that.
And then, what of course, else we got,
and then we're going to do the UFO sightings right after we finish this little intro that we're attempting to do here. You know, we always seem to have trouble with our intros, Dave.
I don't know why. You know, every outtake show you've ever done, John, has never had any problems with any of our intros. So
I don't know shows you're listening to.
Yes, obviously it's not ours, right?
Hey, I bet you'd like to ask me something, wouldn't you?
I would love to ask you something. Hey, John.
Yeah,
Dave. How would you like to tell me about your problems that you've been experiencing with the internet?
God, I can't believe you asked me this question, Dave, but thanks. Yeah, I've been having a lot of internet problems, as, of course, we've been talking about on earlier shows. And I think I might have gotten a lot of them straightened out. But in the process of getting them all straightened out, guess what I amassed? Billions and billions of emails coming in. And one of the emails I got was from our good friend, John Hogue. You remember John?
Who?
Maybe you don't remember John. John Hogue? Sure. You got to remember John Hogue.
John Hogue. That name doesn't ring a bell, John.
Are you sure? Well, let me tell you. You know, John Hogue is the one that writes about Nostradamus with the clarity and interpretive accuracy of a kindred prophet. He uses his own gift of future insight along with the geopolitical savvy of Noam Chomsky to unravel the complex issues affecting us today. Voices such as these, which are needed in our times. You know, he wrote that book back in 1987 on Nostradamus and the Millennium. It sold over 700,000 copies and was translated into 9 languages. Is that amazing?
Now, is he the one that also wrote the autobiography of Sebastian Cabot and the one that where they had pictures of Sissy naked?
Only in your reality.
Oh, okay.
You know what would be great? It would be great if, in our current reality, we could have John Hogue on right now. Wouldn't that be hot?
Oh, say it's not so. Is it? You think that's possible?
I don't know. Let's mentally get him teleported in right now.
Yeah, good. Hello, can you?
Hi there.
Can you hear us, John? John,
did somebody call me from the third eye?
Oh my God, Johnny! I can't believe it. It's John Hogue.
Hi, John.
Golf class.
Hi there.
That's your traditional golf clap intro, John. You know, courteous and to the point.
So how's it psychically hanging, guys?
Left to right. On occasion, depends if I'm watching a horror movie or not. Yeah. Not a horror movie, but a horror movie.
Well, you know, it's lucky that we were able to get you teleported in here, John, because we've got a scad full of questions we'd like to ask you with the elections soon to be ending soon. So would you mind if we asked you a few questions?
Yeah, go hit. Lay it on me.
With the election process coming up here, I mean, real short, we're like, what, about a week away or less than a week away, actually. Who do you see winning the election?
Well, the guy that I saw back in 2007. 2006, actually, who was the one person who could stop Hillary Clinton from being president, and that's Barack Obama.
Uh-huh.
You know, I've been making presidential predictions since 1968. This is my 40th anniversary.
Wow.
And I've been 10-0, but kind of had a funny little sidetrack with thinking that perhaps Hillary Clinton would win the primary, which is kind of interesting because in a way she did. She won the popular vote. If you tabulated everybody that went to vote between Obama and Clinton, she won it by 174,000 extra people, which made me start to think, you know, perhaps all these years I haven't been predicting the winner of a presidency, because back in 2000, I was on a lot of shows saying, you know, Al Gore's going to win by 500,000 votes, and I feel I'm going to be right and equally wrong about it. And that's what I documented. And of course, what happened is he did win by 500,000 popular vote, but he lost the Electoral College. So,
all right.
So, you know, I'm sitting here and here it happened again. You know, I had this prediction about two people who'd be running for office that would become president. So unless Hillary Clinton is going to run again, I don't know if that's going to happen. But I did say something in my articles at HogueProphecy.com that said there's one kink in that destiny that if that gets exposed, Obama will capitalize on it and she'll lose. And that was her vote for the Iraq War in 2002 to give war powers to the president. I said, that's the one thing. If she doesn't find a way to sort that out and get the anti-war people in the Democratic Party back on her side, that's the one thing standing in the way of her destiny, being president in 2008. And so I thought that was a real long shot, but that's apparently was not the case.
Well, you know, I mean, win some, lose some, right, John?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, you know.
But you were 10-0 before that, right? Before that prediction?
Well, you know, I could be... I could still be 11-0 because I also said that Obama would be a president in the future, and said it before most people were even looking at him as the Black Kennedy. I made an article back in August of 2006 saying, you know, this is the new Black Kennedy,
right.
and that he, you know, the thing. Now it doesn't look so unusual to say, oh yeah, of course Obama's going to win, but I will say that it's going to be a tighter race. In a few days than the polls are showing. I don't think he's going to get a popular mandate that means exceeding 15% of the popular vote, but he could get as much as 8, but I think it's going to be more closer to 6 or 4% of the popular vote.
Wow. All right, well, moving on, what's happening with the damn economy, John? I mean, have we bottomed out yet, or is there going to be more of a downslide, you see?
Well, here's one I wish I did get wrong. I wrote in my last, back in December, in predictions for 2008, that this would be like the big story, is that we would go into a very deep recession in 2008. And back then I said it'd take about 2 years to turn around, and I would say that the bottom hasn't been reached yet, that the muck at the bottom of the Mississippi of our economy is around 7,000 to 7,500 points. When it finally settles into the murk down there, then the sell-offs will stop, and maybe slowly things will start lurching forward. But it should be a little better by December. But
did you say lurching forward or lurching forward?
Lurching forward in that the stocks will rise a little bit. People start slowly selling, I mean buying again, and things will be flowing. But it's going to be a two-year, you know, it's sort of like somebody who's just had a heart attack and a coma. His name is Joe Economy, and we just revived him, got his heart pumping again, and now we're kind of figuring out what's left in the gray matter, you know, after the crash, and
right.
and then we'll adapt from that. But it's going to be, I mean, the first 2 years of President Obama's administration are going to be, if we could all survive those first 2 years, there's some great, there could be a great new direction for the country. And what I'm more concerned about is, you know, all this talk, you know, Joe Biden committed the political sin of the moment, which is telling the truth about the next president being tested in a crisis. And I just wrote a bulletin today, sent out to my newsletter list on HogueProphecy.com, that I think you're going to see the first crisis may come from a friend, not from an enemy of America. It could come from when Likud and Benjamin Netanyahu formed a government in the early spring in the new Israeli government. And Netanyahu has made it very clear, he doesn't say it now, but back in 2005 he was saying it openly, that if he was ever prime minister again, his first act would be to bomb Iran's nuclear power stations. This will be the first crisis for the new president, who hopefully behind doors will make it very clear to the new prime minister of Israel that the days of unilateral action are over, and that we need to talk this thing out.
Wow.
Before I ask my question here, John, you were talking about Joe Economy. I'm just curious, will Joe Plumber be able to get along with Joe Economy?
Well, you know, I paint houses on the side, so I don't know. In fact, I didn't even have time to wash the paint off. I got paint all over me as I'm doing this interview. So.
Oh, well, all right. Well, then we'll flip over here to energy. Everybody's kind of concerned about energy, but with the kind of a pullback in the recession that's been going on, it seems like there has been kind of a distraction now with alternative energy because of the price of oil and gas being so low. So are we still getting closer to possibly an alternative energy switchover, or do you think that's going to be put on the back burner again for a while?
No, it's going to be on the front burner. It's going to be on the front burner for the next 36 years. It's going to be Obama is going to create, as he echoes so much of the Kennedy past karmically, he's going to get the country on a 10-year program that's going to be as big as going to the moon, only it's going to be getting, we're going to start nation building our own nation and changing the infrastructure. You know, back in predictions for 2008, I said another big positive thing was going to happen in the year 2008. As people will remember, that's the year when the ecological industrial revolution began. And it's there. It's being promoted by even great oil giants like T. Boone Pickens. And it's the way out, even with the prices getting lower, because as the prices get lower in gas, it's counterbalanced by the whole economy having less wealth in a deep recession. So it's, you know, at least our gas will be more affordable, but we really need to create jobs, and we need to do what Americans have always done in crisis. And we get in these crises once in every 80 years or so. It's what's called a fourth turning. It's a fourth generational turning that happens. It happened last during the Depression. It happens now. And it's where Americans have to redefine themselves in crisis. We've done it many times. It's one of the great things Americans do. And that we may come out of this next presidency as the people leading the world into a more earth-friendly, ecologically sound, and profitable situation. We'll create a new economy.
Wow. All right. Well, you know, that leads me to an interesting question. What do you think the geopolitical events that may or may not happen in the future we should be keeping an eye on, John? And if so, if you have some that you want to throw our way, why should we keep our eye on them?
Well, definitely should keep your eye on the weather, because it actually has more of a threat it is more of a threat to our economy than the what I call the casino economy that we have, where we keep changing the house rules. I mean, in a way, our economy is sitting like a Mississippi barge off the coast of Mississippi, and everybody's wheeling and dealing, and some people are losing their shirts, and some people are making the big money, and everybody's so engrossed into this little game that they don't see Hurricane Katrina coming over the horizon. And that Hurricane Katrina, in this metaphor, that is global warming. And that is an unsustainable use of resources by an exploding population. And so there's going to be more and more sustainability issues that are coming up. I mean, it's as little as ubiquitous as not having enough concrete in the world to build everything we want, not enough steel. There's these big management issues. And the other important thing, very important thing for the next president is to not get into a syndrome where we start another Cold War with Russia, because that would fit a lot of what Nostradamus had said about the great brothers of the North, the Eagle Kings, he called them. The prophecy kind of stated, and it was even dated, and I can go into that more detail in another show, but it even dated the end of the Cold War and basically follows a certain collective prophetic insight of a lot of prophets that said the Cold War was not going to end in a thermonuclear Armageddon, but actually the two Cold Warriors would end up trying to be friends and then have their friendship, tentative as it is, undermined by a Middle Eastern source, a terrorist, or terrorist mindset.
Right.
And then when that happens and the Cold War begins, Nostradamus gives a fast track and a slow track to another concentration of war between America and Russia. The fast track is 3 years and 7 months. The long track is 13 years. If what happened in August with the crisis in Georgia is the beginning of the countdown, then President Obama in 2012, early 2012, about three springs from now, is going to face a crisis with Russia. And if we sort that out properly with diplomacy and raw intelligence rather than reaction, then we postpone this confrontation until the year 2021.
We're going to have to segue here very shortly into our UFO sightings. But before we do, there is, of course, something I wanted to bring up, which is the last time I was at your website, I happened to notice that I guess you have a new ebook that is out. And there was some mention, I guess, about Mabus and the Antichrist or something like that. I'm probably not even pronouncing it correctly. But could you briefly?
You call it Mabus and I call it Mabus. You call it tomatoes, and I call it tomatoes.
All right. Hey, quit copying my material, will you?
Well, I just thought I'd want to lighten it up after I laid that apocalyptic egg on everybody.
I tell you what. Personally, I love the
apocalypse.
Easy for you to say.
Yeah, I love the apocalyptic egg, you know?
As we're cracking that apocalyptic egg, perhaps you could tell us a little bit about this book, To Catch, which is supposedly a catalyst for Armageddon, and you could kind of briefly tell us about. And, of course, we want to remind all our listeners and members alike that we're going to have John come back here and get into a lot more detail about all the subjects that he's covering here and a lot more. This is just kind of like a little brief up to date and to find out where you're at, John. But please tell us a little bit about Mabus, the Antichrist. However, Mabus, I believe, is how it's spelled.
Yeah. Okay. In short, this ebook is something I've had thousands and thousands of people ask me questions for the last 10 years about. And I finally have put together a book, which I think the timing is just right for it. And it's all of Nostradamus' prophecies about what he calls his third Antichrist. I call the book Nostradamus and the Antichrist, codenamed Mabus.
Mabus.
At least that's how I pronounce it. Mabus, Mabus, doesn't matter. But the thing is, you see, Napoleon was the first Antichrist.
Okay.
Nostradamus' prophecies. And Hitler was the second. And the third, and he gave them code names. Paul Naelleron was the anagram. These are word codes. And that spells out Napoleon Roi, Napoleon King. Hister was the anagram he used for Hitler.
Right.
It's the ancient name of the Danube where Hitler grew up. In this, Mabus is, this whole book is about, it's like a sleuth saying detective story. It's how we go follow the leads to see who among us today, because this is supposed to be the time of the third Antichrist, who among us today, recently dead or in power or about to be in power, may actually decode their names into this person. Now, what's intriguing about it is Saddam Hussein's name can be decoded. Usama bin Laden's name, that makes a lot of sense, those two as that kind of person. But what's disturbing is also President Bush's name can decode into it. And what's more disturbing is that even President Obama's name can be decoded into it. That doesn't mean that those are the people. In fact, I will argue something that shows that it's actually somebody who's already died. It isn't somebody who's alive right now. And you see, the thing that's weird about this Antichrist is the other two lived out their destiny. But Nostradamus makes it loud and clear that this one dies first, before his war even begins, and his death actually is the catalyst for a 27-year war.
Hmm.
And it sounds like he's a terrorist or terrorist potentate. So it actually gives more credence to a man who's recently dead, like Saddam Hussein, than it does anyone who's alive.
Interesting.
Wow, that's very interesting.
Now, are people able to get, I believe it's Nostradamus and the Antichrist, codename Mabus, and it's an ebook. This is available at your website at hogueprophecy.com. Is that not correct?
Yeah, you just go, everybody just go to hogueprophecy.com at the home page. You'll see a little thumbnail in the upper left corner for the book cover, and just click on it, and it'll give you a few pages of illustrations and stuff, the overview of the book. And, yeah, it sells $14.50 at hogueprophecy.com. And, you know, in my little bit of the Industrial Green Revolution, I try as much as I can now to write books that don't destroy trees. So this is a book that when you buy it, you're also kind of protecting trees because it's made out of photons and electrons. It's something you download once you've purchased it. You can automatically download it into your computer. And if you want to print it out, that's fine. But you can also read on your computer.
John, didn't I read somewhere on your website that you have family that was from Austria?
No.
Yeah. Where are you reading
Rare.
This stuff, Dave?
Oh, you mean? Oh, I know who you mean.
Yeah. You know
the Hoganator.
Yeah, the Hoganator from Austria. But
the Hoganator.
Yeah, but you know, I mean, I wanted to say goodbye in a very special way to you for your native country, John, if you don't mind.
Oh Lord.
I'll speak in my mother tongue and respond.
Well, this is from one of my favorite musicals, The Sound of Music, and I'm just going to start saying goodbye to you, John, from Brigida. I'm glad to go. I cannot tell a lie. I flirt. I float. I fleetly flee. I fly. The sun has gone to bed, and so must I. So long, farewell, auf Wiedersehen, goodbye, 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 goodbye.
Now the Hoganator would say goodbye by saying, the hills are alive and it's kind of creepy.
Well, we don't have to worry about Sonny and Cher ever having any competition, especially Sonny, because I think Sonny's dead.
And the continuation of that might be, I want my half hour back that I just spent with Dave and Johnny.
Yeah.
You will get it back, I'm sure.
Yeah, well, anyway, listen, you know, we should have asked, but, you know, we could have maybe got you some painting jobs, you know.
Please.
Well, in case his prediction on Obama goes down the tube, John has a 2-for-1 special.
Yeah, Joe the plumber and John the painter.
And John the painter.
Let's give it a shot, John, and listen to the show as we say, could our good friend John Hogue off air?
And now here's your UFO sightings
from around the world.
This is ATS Mix.
What? Whoa, what am I hearing?
What is this?
From above, topsecret.com.
Ah, crap!
Here are your anomalous sightings
from around the world.
These are the reported sightings over the United States. This is David C. Around Lake Michigan, a viewer stated, for the past week there have been fireball UFOs flying at incredible speeds over Lake Michigan. These UFOs are also being pursued by jet aircraft. The UFOs make W-like patterns and bounce up and down like ping pong balls. Stealth aircraft have been seen many of these nights in chase of the fireballs. Also, a strange, bright, multicolor light object has been hanging over the lake without moving whatsoever. Lights are in the west and southwest of the sky, moving very fast and extremely erratic, following no flight path or keeping a straight line. These UFOs have also been going from dead stop to light speed and then stopping dead again. They are very strange, but becoming too often of a sight in the sky. In California, an observer stated, my teenage son and I were driving west on I-80 freeway from Sacramento towards Davis when at first I thought I saw a falling star. It was very bright, ball of light, with a comet-like tail of sparks coming from above and an angle like it was a falling star. Then the sparks quit and the ball of light got brighter and then after about 6 seconds it disappeared. I thought it was an amazing falling star like I had never seen. Then my son noticed another orange glowing light lower in the sky. The light kept getting brighter and was kind of pulsing. Then a second light appeared beside it that was pulsing as well. They danced around a bit, moving slower, lower, and lower toward the ground. Then there was a third light dancing around with it. And then as they got lower to the ground, one light went out, and then the second, and then the third. We exited the freeway and pulled over, but there were no other lights in the sky other than a few airplane lights we could see and the stars. I would imagine that anyone driving the same direction that we were would have had to see the show of lights. There was just no explanation for it. This is David C. reporting for AboveTopSecret.com.
This is Tamriel from Godbox Cafe with sightings from across Canada. At around 2:25 a.m. on October 3rd, a witness and mother were driving home on Highway 55 from Saskatoon, Saskatchewan, enjoying the northern lights display in the clear night sky between North Battleford and Meadow Lake. On passing the lake in a westerly direction, only the stars remained visible until both witnesses were amazed to see the sky light up bright blue as far as the eye could see, and a huge lightning blue-colored ball with a tail streak silently through the sky from south to north in about 2 seconds before vanishing. The witness wrote that they do not believe in UFOs, but that many people have claimed to see unusual phenomena regularly just north of this sighting at Waterhen Lake. The next evening, between 5 and 6 p.m., southeast above the Pearson International Airport near Toronto, Ontario, a witness was letting out the dog and looked up to see an object hovering overhead. Rushing in to get a pair of binoculars, the witness called for a sister to join in on the viewing. By zooming in on the object with the binoculars, the witness offered up the following description. It was silver and shaped like a huge can sitting on four pulsating red lights. Both witnesses were up the entire night pondering the object's purpose. That same evening at 8:30 p.m., northeast of the St. Clair River in Sarnia, Ontario, a witness was standing in the backyard smoking when two bright lights became visible heading eastward as though they were on an intercept course, one following the other. It appeared as though they were traveling at twice the speed of any jetliner at a much higher altitude and without any telltale flashing lights. They proceeded across the sky without dropping or burning out like a comet or meteor. This is Tamriel from Godbox Cafe, keeping my eyes to the skies for AboveTopSecret.com.
Well, John, I tell you what I'm really looking forward to, and that's our featured guest on lecture series number 3. We have the one and only Clifford Stone.
Here's Clifford Stone at the Bay Area UFO Expo.
The Cliffinator.
Ladies and gentlemen, let's welcome Mr. Clifford Stone. Ladies and gentlemen, please bear with me today. It's been quite some time before I got out and gave a public talk. I feel like the first time I went to church, I went there and they talked about the Jews getting out of the land of Egypt. So when I went home, my father asked me, he says, well, did you learn anything in Sunday school? I said, well, yeah, they told us about the Jews getting out of the land of Egypt. He said, well, what did they tell you? I says, well, they told us that they went ahead and set them free and they started to walk through the wilderness. Didn't have any food or water, so they called the Air Force. The Air Force dropped them food and water. After that, the Egyptians decided they made a mistake, letting them go. So they took off after them. While they got to the Red Sea and there was no way for them to cross, so they called in the Army and Corps of Engineers. And they built a bridge and they walked across it. After that happened, the Egyptians, they started to come across it also. So the question is what to do, because the children of Israel didn't have any weapons. So God said, don't worry about it, I'll call in the Air Force. So they called in the Air Force and bombed the bridges. My dad looked at me kind of strangely and said, is that what they really taught you, son? I said, no, Dad, but if I told you what they told me, you wouldn't believe it. So, truly, it goes with UFOs. There's a whole lot of aspects to UFOs, and hopefully I have the time to cover what I'm wanting to cover here. Right towards the very end, we're going to really touch up on what I really want to talk about. And that's the 1968 Symposium on UFOs. Congress, from time to time, has been briefed by the Air Force on UFOs. The purpose of the briefing was to act as a counter, of the briefings rather, were to act as countermeasures to ensure there wasn't an open hearing. Now, from time to time in modern days, and I've been involved in one of those efforts, there's been efforts to try to get open hearings before Congress again. Barring some really, 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 really strong physical evidence, it's not going to happen, folks. So it's going to take places like this where we can share information, get people to think about what is really going on, then assess all the information. Not that somebody else can tell you what's going on, but through the release of documentation that can be bona fide, that has a pedigree where you can trace it back to where it came from, you'll know the truth. And then you can decide for yourself the reality of UFOs. Myself, I know they're real. There's no way I could ever deny that because of the things I've been involved in. Today, what I want to talk or touch up on is the relationship the Air Force had with Congress through several years, particularly after the 1957 flap that we had here in the United States, because a lot of people want to know what was going on, to include Congress. Bear with me, this is the first time I ever used PowerPoint on my own, so it's, if I make mistakes, act like they didn't happen. Okay, the first document up deals with McCollum's subcommittee briefing. The United States Air Force met with members of the McCollum subcommittee to be briefed by the Air Force as to the activities of the U.S. Air Force in the handling of unidentified flying objects. Now, UFOs had been around for quite some time. They had been recorded throughout history, which the Air Force made sure each subcommittee they addressed knew this, that the only reason that there was an interest now in UFOs, we just came out of the largest war in our history, in world history, actually, and there was still this concern about technological surprise by a foreign power. We were never, ever going to let that happen. Another Pearl Harbor was never to occur. So a lot of people were very concerned and asking members of Congress, what's going on? Is the Air Force covering anything up? In an effort to get the Air Force to believe, or to get Congress to believe that the Air Force was doing the best they could do, they went ahead and briefed members of Congress. This was one of the first ones after the 1957 flap that we had in the United States, which a flap is a large number of sightings within a geographical area. Now, from this one page, you see that the Air Force, or the committee, thought, well, the Air Force is doing the best they could, and they were doing a really good job of it. So, really, we don't need to hold congressional hearings to have the public to come in and tell us what they think they saw, because the Air Force was telling them, look, war scares, mass hysteria, misidentification of known objects, nothing really to it. We have a couple of unknowns. Actually, at that time, the unknowns were running at about 25% that they could not explain. And also, the very onset with Project Sign, they really had more people involved to where they really could get to the meat of the phenomenon. But Sign wasn't always advised to that, as we shall see as we go through this lecture. This is where the Air Force Congressional Liaison is explaining to the powers that be, gee, we asked Congress if they'd go ahead and make a public statement to endorse us and say we really did a good job and the public has nothing to fear because the Air Force is on the ball and they have all the answers and there's nothing to fear because UFOs just don't exist. Well, Congress, while saying they were doing a good, the Air Force was doing a good job, didn't want to go that extra yard and say, yeah, we'll put it in writing. This letter clearly explains that things could change. Someday there may be somebody that really has evidence that UFOs are real, that are of a foreign power, are of extraterrestrial origin, and they're exhibiting technology above and beyond our present capability. So no, we're not going to give you that letter because we want to be elected next election. And if we give you that letter and it turns out not being that way, we're going to have a problem, which is a good thing. Once again, Congress was being played as the fools of ship, the fools of the ship, as a result of what they were being told, which fact versus the truth. All we had was Project Sign, secret classification. Remember that secret classification, folks. This one deals with the Henderson briefing. Once again, they were told all the nice things that the Air Force was doing to ensure that UFOs were being handled properly, that the people who reported UFOs from the street was taken serious. Air Force pilots who were directed to chase these things were being taken serious. And yeah, we got radar returns, but don't worry about the radar returns, folks, because these are temperature inversions or flocks of birds. We knew better. We knew better because our radar technicians, who were highly trained, who had years of experience, were saying these are good solid returns. And we know the difference between the radar cross-section of balloons, of birds, and of temperature inversions. Temperature inversions is normally one strong, one weak return. But each return is always strong, and they're moving sometimes between several hundred miles an hour to several thousand miles an hour, when the fastest jet at that time at top speed may have been between 800 and 1200 miles an hour. You were experiencing advanced technology. They also went and called these unidentified anomalies. And when they used the term anomalies, they were referring that there's intelligence involved. Today, that term is still used, and I'll get into that. I don't know whether in this talk or during the workshop, but you'll hear that term again. Now, in the Henderson briefing, here you have all the nice explanations the Air Force has as to what it could possibly be. Please note, at no time do they suggest that any foreign power might have technology above and beyond that which we were capable of duplicating. Nor was there any indication of any object being of extraterrestrial origin. In short, there was nothing out of the ordinary. People were just being fooled by their eyes. What they thought they were seeing, they were not seeing. And they also felt that the program should be reduced in scope. We're putting too much money in it. Well, Blue Book was, at the time Project Sign, was reduced in scope, but it would come back as Project Grudge and have a little bit more horsepower, did a little bit better job, but their hands were tied. And that you'll find out in the workshop. These right here were the representatives that was briefed in the Henderson briefing as to what was going on. Once again, they endorsed that the Air Force was doing a good job. Of course, they had, other than layman's knowledge, very little knowledge of what really was going on with UFOs. Simply no more than what we read in the newspapers. They also knew that a lot of newspapers would sensationalize, so the Air Force was supposed to be telling them the truth. I mean, who is going to lie to Congress? Surely not the Air Force. So they went ahead, yep, you guys are doing a good job. Once again, don't ask for it in writing, because we can't go there. Because, see, we're not really sure you're telling us the truth. And if lies get the job done, you lie. In the intelligence community, there's no God, there's no morality. There's only the mission. And whatever it takes to get the mission done, that's what you do. And if it means lying to Congress, we do it. And if you don't believe that, look at the mess the world is in right now, and that is because our elected officials have routinely been lied to by many, many, many other people in top government and within the armed forces, because it was expedient and it achieved the end means. Now we suffer for those lies that was told to Congress because there's no check and balance. Now this one was a very interesting attempt by actually the leading authority in trying to get the congressional inquiry at this time to where hard questions could be asked the Air Force by none other than members of NICAP. It was dead reckoning that they had to stop this hearing from taking place because NICAP had information and the Air Force knew it. By the way, NICAP is the National Investigations Committee on Aerial Phenomena. There was also what was called the Aerial Phenomena Research Organization that was involved in this, once again, trying to get congressional hearings to where they could have qualified people from both organizations ask the Air Force serious questions using the Air Force's own documentation, which neither one of these organizations was supposed to have, but some people in uniform knew the truth and knew that, one, UFOs were extraterrestrial, two, there was evidence, even in the unclassified files, or should I say the secret files, that clearly indicated this being the case. And if the Air Force was confronted with their own files, then some of the conclusions they were airing to the public would have to be aired out, and the truth finally bore out. The Air Force could not let that happen. The Air Force, in its infinite wisdom, went and decided they had to have a game plan. Now, that game plan amounted to going ahead, telling Congress, look, these groups have a lot of people from the military, high-ranking officials that make up their board of directors. They are telling you that they are going to be the ones asking the questions and that we can't ask questions of them. Does that seem fair to you? Should they have the right to just question us, the Air Force, and we can't ask questions back? Well, I'm going to tell you right now, initially it didn't seem fair to me. And probably if I was on one of the congressmen was on that board, I'd say, you know, that isn't right. But then when I felt that way, I hadn't been in the military. Now that I've been in the military, I know darn good about what those suckers are thinking. It's not a problem, folks. We will go ahead and we will get the people that are leaking this information. And you know what? We'll seal up the leaks, because when we go ahead and court-martial the folks that are leaking it, nobody else is going to leak it out again. The only thing we have to do is do damage control while we're there. Well, what you do, you take effective countermeasures, you know how to respond to the questions, and you also do an assessment as to what type of questions it's going to be asked. They're going to be the hard questions that if you're not ready for, there's going to be a slip of the tongue, and the cat's going to be out of the bag. So you prepare for the questions knowing they're going to be hard. But you also know the end result is you're going to seal the leaks. So it's going to be able to go ahead and get any more information that would prove once and for all there was more information above and beyond the secret information that alluded to there being something involved, which, once again, the Air Force would want to water down. Well, if it is, it's ours, and it's exhibiting advanced technology that they just didn't tell us about. And that's always been the game plan, such as it was here. Anyhow, these people went ahead and wrote a nasty letter to Major Donald E. Kehoe, U.S. Marine Corps retired, who at the time was director of NICAP, stating, how dare you go ahead. You made us think you had hard physical evidence, and you had nothing. He did have something. He had Blue Book files that alluded to high strangeness cases. Didn't come right out and say they were interplanetary, but they alluded to advanced technology, the craft being real, and we were powerless to do anything about it. That some of the cases he was going to be presenting there involved modern-day fighters incapable of even getting in a position where they could engage the targets. The targets could fly, or the UFOs could fly circles around their fighters. And they hoped that this would go ahead and open up the doors of secrecy and silence, the doors of deception. But it didn't work. A gentleman by the name of Mr. Smart actually was the best friend the Air Force had, because he killed any effort for that inquiry to get off the ground. This here is a letter explaining how well everything went with stopping that congressional from ever getting off the ground, and how now they didn't have to worry about a congressional inquiry or a congressional hearing on the subject matter. From time to time, between 1960 and 1968, there would be items brought up in Congress dealing with UFOs, but nothing really, really major. 66, I'm getting ahead of myself, is the time, though, that they really thought that there may be a problem, which is why they went ahead, talked to the universities. Most of the universities said, nope, we don't want anything to do with UFOs, but they did convince the University of Colorado to do a $313,000 contract for an 18-month study to come out and scientifically answer the questions that, you know, whether UFOs were real or not. Anyhow, that grew to over $500,000 before it was over, and it was one of the largest wastes of money in our history, because it was not a scientific effort. There was a scientific effort, though, and it didn't cost near that much. It just didn't get off the ground, and we'll get to that. remember Dead Reckoning. You get it in Congress, and it shows the Air Force has been not absolutely truthful. That's going to make a lot of congressmen mad. They're going to, all on their own, want to know the truth. What is it you're hiding from Congress? And it's very important to tell Congress the truth. Then Congress can decide whether we should be told the truth or not. That's what we put them in office for. Blue Book was still at an administrative level. Behind the scenes, there were other, more serious investigations going on with UFOs, because the Air Force, actually the intelligence community, which members of the Air Force and certain units in the Air Force was aware that UFOs were real, they were extraterrestrial, they were here. And guess what, folks? A UFO crash is not something that happens every day. They are genuinely rare and unique, but we are interested in any debris that might be left behind. For example, if they have a craft that goes down, immediately their people put out a rescue effort, and they will attempt to get the people and the craft back. A lot of times, the debris they'll leave behind are parts of the craft. When we get there, the craft's long gone, but the debris is still there. Oh, by the way, the witnesses, in layman's terms, tell what they see. What we do with the witnesses' descriptions, take what we know, and we come up with a viable, hard data on what possible UFO that could be, what its origin was, what type of craft it was, because they had all this stuff cataloged, and they were updating it constantly. It never was stagnated. There was always constant updating on it, to include the living entities that were on them. And the Air Force hated NICAP. The Air Force was afraid of what NICAP could do. Now, a lot of the things that NICAP was espousing was disinformation, not knowingly, not meaningfully. But the Air Force decided that the best way to fight fire was with fire. So they started to release information to NICAP on the QT, knowing a lot of it would be false and also hurt their cause, without them knowing it'd be false or hurting their cause. Once again, this aided greatly in stopping this subcommittee in hearing anything about how the Air Force was doing the UFO investigations. Once again, the committee was exposed to the activities of Blue Book, and Blue Book was showing how they handled UFO investigations. And the one interesting thing about this was that they made it clear, we're not trying to answer every UFO report we get. We are looking very hard at those that seem to have some type of scientific or technical value. Well, the fact that scientific or technical value was gleaned in any of the UFO reports should ring a bell and say, okay, then the Air Force has those cases. At this time, yes, the Air Force had those cases. At this time, 20% of the UFO cases that Blue Book had, which were really, really good cases that had all the information. Let me restate that. All the information required to come up with a prosaic, logical, rational explanation, if there was one. There wasn't one. That's why they were unidentified. The Air Force would go ahead and put a fighter aircraft, a planet, a star. If they could put that planet, aircraft, or star in close proximity with the UFO to just make it, that's the explanation, even when they knew it wasn't. So some of the explained cases they had wasn't explained at all. They substituted. They did not take into account our consideration the testimony of the witnesses when they stated, we saw the planet. That's not what it was. We saw the aircraft. That's not what it was. The Montana film of 1950 that was taken of the two objects that was flying over the ball field. That case right there, the Air Force never, ever identified. The Air Force knew it was not the two aircraft, but they ruled it was. In 1956, a UFO movie came out entitled Unidentified Flying Objects, Truth About Unidentified Flying Objects, Truth About Flying Saucers. That movie, in my opinion, is one of the best movies that was ever made. They had a lot of people who were in it during the Blue Book time that acted as consultants and even played in the movie. Captain Ruppelt was one. Al Chop was another. The story was about Al Chop's life. He went from being a non-believer to a believer. Took Hynek a little longer, but Professor Hynek got to the point where he started to believe. And actually, suppositional on my part, I believe he knew before he died that we had visitors, that many UFO reports were of extraterrestrial craft. But yet, they managed to keep Congress from having any serious inquiry. This right here was the endorsement showing that everybody concurred in the Air Force with the fine job they did of, once again, pulling the wool over the eyes of members of Congress. Now we're getting to the first serious inquiry into unidentified flying objects. Congress went ahead, held hearings about the Michigan UFO sightings and several other locations in March of 1966. Not a full-blown hearing, but Congressman Ford was very angry, very upset that the Air Force was saying it was swamp gas. I'm going to clarify something right now. Hynek got there and was told, okay, we got to find out what's going on there. When he was told that, he says, fine, it'll take a couple days for me to talk to the witnesses, try to get some feel as to what type of phenomena they might experience out here, and come up with some possible rational explanations. Well, the officer on scene said, that won't work. We have a press conference in 30 minutes, Professor, and you have to have some answers then. He then remembered what one of the professors back at the universities told him, that there was a lot of swamp area out there, and there was things that they called swamp gas or marsh gas, and this was gas that was released that would glow from decaying vegetation. And that could be one of the things he might want to look into to see if that was a possible explanation. Knowing that, he went and stated, well, one thing that could be causing the sightings is swamp gas. Press added up. Aha, answered. These country hicks don't know what they're talking about. They're seeing swamp gas. Excuse me, folks, they saw swamp gas all their life. They knew what swamp gas was. Now, I come from Roswell, New Mexico. You'd think we'd know what a weather balloon looks like. A week before I came out here, my kids where I work, and I say my kids from my heart because all those kids where I work, but they called me out, Stoney, there's a UFO, there's a UFO. I come on out, I look up there. Immediately, I knew what it was. It's a balloon. The sun was going down very low on the horizon, yet the balloon was at least 60,000 feet high. Therefore, the sun was hitting the balloon, causing a brilliant silver object to appear in the sky. By the grace of God, I had a pair of binoculars, because even my kids, who normally will take me at my word, didn't believe I was telling the truth. They knew I worked in the program. Are you sure you didn't spread disinformation? Like, now, that's not a balloon. I said, sure it is. Anyhow, some people were at work. They also know my interest in UFOs. They had already called every employee from where I worked. There's a UFO in the sky, a UFO in the sky. So the security staff that night was very busy calling all the employees saying, look, it's a weather balloon. Stoney identified it. And of course it was, are they sure? Well, he's got the kids lined up looking through binoculars right now, and you can see the balloon and you can see the instrument package hanging beneath it. So I convinced them, but then the media start to call in because our human resources called to report the UFO and said, we got a UFO expert that works out there at Job Corps, and he's checking it out right now. Well, being a government site, they can't just come and ask me questions. So they went ahead and cleared it through John Merchant to where they could come and ask me questions. Even the media was getting a little concerned. So while they were there, I told them the kids had priority over the binoculars, but I said, no, watch. as the sun gets lower into the horizon, it's going to take on an amber-like color. And true to form, that's what it did. It was a weather balloon. But knowing that, I would have thought a whole lot of other people had seen the same thing before. But in the mindset of UFOs in Roswell, everyone's always thinking about UFOs. And always, everybody looks at the person across it from the coffee table with them. Is this person from here or someplace else? I've had people come up and ask me, are you from this planet? And I said, I haven't figured it out yet. I don't even know if I want to be from this planet with all the problems we're having. But we went ahead, got it all resolved. The Air Force came out 5:48 that day. They released weather balloon from White Sands. And that's where I said that they'd find out that it had been released. End of mystery. But until they saw it through the glasses, they were concerned. Here's the people who made the committee up. They listened intently to the speakers. Unlike the Disclosure Project, such as what I was in, it wasn't just people who had a story to tell. Even though, I'm going to tell you right now, those were sincere people there. They were telling the truth. Whether anyone else believes them or not, I want you to know they were telling the truth. History will bear that out. Dr. Hynek was there. Dr. James McDonald. Dr. Carl Sagan, he was there. Dr. Robert Hall. Dr. James Harder. Dr. Robert Baker. I want you to remember Dr. Robert Baker. I don't know if he ever got active in the UFO field or not. Some papers presented. Look, Menzel was a good guy, okay? I mean, he may have been a debunker, but he was a good guy. I mean, Harvard, he had to put his 2 cents worth in. But I want you to know the folks that were pro handled him greatly. And we have that report. It took me 5 years to finally get the microfilm. But I got the microfilm and we put the 250-page document on a CD, so we have it out there if any of you folks are interested. Now, Congress was taken back and very interested in what these people had to say and wanted some recommendations as to where they could move along. What could they do to get to the bottom of the UFO phenomenon? It was Dr. Barker that came up with first telling what conclusions he had reached in 16 years of investigating the phenomena, not from pro or con, but from a scientific interest and viewpoint. He realized that there was something worthy of investigation. I think he also really leaned toward them being of extraterrestrial origin. These are some of the recommendations and conclusions that he came up with. Very viable, and was even considered by this particular committee. It would have gone further had it not been for the fact that it would have cost a whole lot of money, and Congress wasn't willing to do that because Vietnam and several other things that was going on at the time was depleting the national treasury of a whole lot of funds, and the money just wasn't there. What we need today is for another effort along these lines to take place, and hopefully we can get more scientific people involved to where that does come about. The aftermath once again goes on explaining that while the scientific panel would like to see these things go into play, they understand lack of funds will probably never see it come to fruition. End result, it did come to fruition. One of the greatest documents in UFO history, I believe, is this document. It's one of the most sincere, one of the most thought-provoking documents, down-to-earth documents that's out there. Yet, for better than, 30 years, it's been the least read document. I hope to change that. I hope it will open eyes, open minds, and get people to ask some more questions about what's really going on. So in closing, ladies and gentlemen, I'd like to say that in every effort that the U.S. government has made, they have never, ever actually got a congressional hearing off the grounds. What we really need is a congressional hearing. I know UFOs are real. I know they're interplanetary. I know they're here now. I know the United States government knows this to be true. There are programs, and I dealt with some of those programs. I've made a promise. I can't bring them out tonight. God, I wish I could. I have gone a whole lot further than from the time I was in the Disclosure Project.
The documents are out there. At Wright-Patterson, there is a document that aids in identifying the true identity of the alien craft. It's not classified. It's military priority. I can't get it, but I am trying to put myself in a position where I can request it. I will throw myself on my sword for the truth. I will not grab another and throw them on the sword. One person came hoping I would go after it. He gave me evidence. He proved to me that the document was there. If I go after it, they're going to be able to identify who gave me the information. Then they'd go after him. That I will never, ever do. I will never put somebody else in harm's way. I never take God out of the equation, ladies and gentlemen. God's always in it. That's the only way any of this makes sense to me is for him to be there. But you know what? The story is about mankind. What we find out in the very near future, and I think that nothing happens between now and the year 2016, then it's going to happen in 2016. There's an event that's going to occur, which I've talked about in the past, and I don't have time to talk about here, that's going to let us know that at least there's a probe out there that we didn't send up there, that somebody found us at least as early as 1947, and they know we're here. However, they have known we are here for a long time. I wish I had more time. I'd like to share some personal stories with you if I could. But when I do, I get very emotional. But there's a lot of beauty to some of the things I had in relationship with our contact with those not of this world. And it needs to be told, and it's going to be told. I promise you that. And within the next 9 months, a lot of where I'm leaving off here will be coming out to where it's more detailed and more in depth. And before this day is over, if you attend the workshop, by the grace of God, you'll be leaving with a whole lot of knowledge, not just what I'm saying, but hopefully a whole lot more than what I'm saying. I can't explain that right now to the workshop. Forgive me. But with that, I'll end my talk. And if there is any questions, please, ladies and gentlemen, feel free to ask. Thank you.
And now it's time for a different view. This is the Skeptic Overview.
I've got Dave Rabbit on the other end, and of course, the one and only CEO of ATS, Bill Irvin, sometimes known as the Skeptic Overlord. And we understand, Bill, that you weren't exactly feeling at 100% today.
The concept of a double-ended volcano comes to mind.
And that would be a dual volcano, right?
Well, we're sorry to hear that.
There she blows.
Turned out to have been some produce on the morning breakfast that should not have been there, or should have been properly washed before it arrived on the breakfast.
Really?
There you go. Yeah.
So what up? I understand from Communique Central that we're not going to do a normal Skeptic Overlord show.
No, we'll change gears a little bit here and do something different, something that always gives me a chuckle on almost a daily basis.
Right. What is it?
And it's the emails we get. I don't know if we're going to call them hate mail or disagree mail or just the crazy mail that comes in through the contact form.
Yeah.
It's the pace of emails we get these days is about 30, somewhere between 25 and 35 emails a day through the contact form. And there's quite an interesting mix of stuff that we get, and we probably should do this more often because there's every once in a while I'll start saving some of the really interesting ones that we get, but there is a weird mix of consistent crap that we get in the email, and I would say they fall into one of, before I get into some specific emails that just are interesting. And I feel like I'm like who is it, Craig Ferguson or something on the Late Show doing these things or something. There's one category of people that want to find out who to contact about advertising in ATS.
Right.
And we get this big ass link on the bottom of the site.
Every page. Yeah. Right.
Click here to learn about advertising in ATS. You can tell we got some sharp people wanting to find out about that. So what I do is I just reply with the link, and they.
Oh, you give them a courteous answer. Damn.
Yeah. Well.
Nice.
Another category is something that has been going on since forever on ATS, even when we were just some small site few people knew about, is people, I say we get like three or four of these a month, getting increasingly irritated that we have not sent them the materials they've purchased on the Novatech Society.
What the hell is that?
Yeah.
Exactly.
Fill us in.
Yeah, there you go. That's just it. I guess there's a few threads on the site about this weird group out there. I guess it's a scam. They're selling something somewhere, somehow. And when people give them their credit card numbers, so I guess a minority of people that don't get stuff that they anticipated end up finding them. And even though the site says above top secret all over the place, they figure it's a good place to complain that they didn't get their Novatech materials.
Wait a minute. Now, you're telling me that it's not anything that we have posted on our site.
There are a couple threads, but that's it.
But, I mean, are the threads promoting and selling this product?
No, actually, the threads are warning people that it's a scam.
So you're telling me that these guys have gone to a completely different site that's not even us, buying this crap, giving them their credit card, and then when they're not getting their merchandise, then they start Googling or whatever, and they come across the two clowns threads in our site that says this is a scam, and now they think they can complain to us. Is that the shortcut of the thing?
Yes, that's good.
I'd love it. What the hell? Well, what do you tell them? Hey, it's not our site.
Yeah, that's it. I mean, not us.
Are there any other categories, Bill?
Well, there's one other of note that we get. We don't get too many of these, but when we get them, it's the Whiskey Tango Foxtrot moment of the quarter. And these, from all practical or from all obvious observations that we can make when we get these emails, they do really appear to be genuine. We get emails from what appears to be somebody in some foreign government covert service wanting to purchase the military technology they've read about on our site, supposedly in the military technology and weapons forum. And it's serious. I mean, the email addresses and the IPs do indeed track back to a government network at this, like Saudi Arabia or some Middle Eastern country. And wow. Yes, these people are serious about spending millions of dollars with above top secret on hardware. And it just, you know, I don't think we want to scam those people, but, you know, it would be interesting.
Usually I get those Nigerian emails that say that they want to give me $1 million if I'll give them my bank account number so that they can just hold it in there for 10 days and I can collect the interest on it.
Oh, no, these people are looking to give us just a couple $1,000s up front in exchange for the technology specifications and manual.
Wow.
So that they can make an informed decision on whether or not they actually want to purchase the hardware. So that's what makes me think these are legitimate requests to purchase the stuff.
Golly.
That
too
they
wild.
Read about top secret. Yeah, that's great.
That's wilder than hell.
Too
it
wild.
Is. So getting into some of the individual emails, I got a lot of these set aside here, and we'll shuffle through some interesting. Now, when I read these emails, I sort of get a real lament for when people knew how to formulate a complete sentence.
Okay. Oh, great!
All right.
So here's one, and I'm not gonna specify who they're coming from, because some of the email addresses are really interesting too, and this is one of them. I assume by the email that we must be.
You there, John?
Hi, how are you? I believe we've lost Bill.
How did we lose him? What? It says call in progress.
Yeah, I know. Now it says call dropped.
All right, what happened to him?
Apparently somebody didn't want us to read those emails.
Yeah, boy, is that spooky. Okay.
Great. We've lost Bill. That dual volcano.
No, let's listen to the commercial. Hang on a sec. Hi, it's us.
It's the voicemail. Dun, dun,
dun, dun. I know, but it's just sending voicemails. See, I just sent him one.
Oh.
All right, let's see. Shall we add him again?
Oh, please.
Now, he's got a little exclamation
What does he have? An exclamation Mexican? What?
Listen, Olive, he's got an exclamation point on his...
All right, here we go. Trying again. One ringy dingy.
Yeah, sorry.
What the hell was that about?
Well, yesterday I had moved my laptop, and probably the power cord came out.
Oh.
And that's when the batteries ran out of juice.
I see. Well, we figured we're going to just roll with this and put it up just as it is, Bill, just so people can see the crazy stuff that we get every time we try to call you. Last week was a perfect example. John had problems. This week, you're having problems. Okay.
Well, so where we left off at was with you just beginning to anonymously read an email.
Yeah, so now that my computer is plugged in again, computers work much better when they're plugged into the power circuit, by the way.
Yeah, they do. I've heard that.
Yes. So... this is a someone who has identified themselves as a college student, and I guess by the email name they're using that it's a female. That's anyway. Please help. I'm doing a project. P-R-O-D.
Yeah, it's a college student.
Yeah, for school, with no H, and want to ask you, letter U, if you can help answer two questions. Who are hiding in Area 51, and is there life forms in other questions?
Are there life forms in other questions? Okay.
It's got to be a Japanese or a Chinese person.
No, it's not.
Really?
Yes.
Really? How do you know that?
Signed, Sarah Palin.
That's right. Yes.
Yeah. How's that view from Alaska, Sarah?
Well, it's a UCLA... email account. Well, I guess it could be an Asian American and going.
But I mean, they're in college and they're sending that, and they can't even spell. What the deal with that?
Well, I'm sure you have to have more examples, Bill.
I have another great example.
All right.
Yeah, where's John Lear? And
we know
it's spelled as if this person is wearing John Lear. If you know what I mean. It's it could be blank. Where's John Lear?
W-A-R, where?
Yes.
It's why you guys can with a K, John Lear. You guys with a Z, just a front. You guys suck. So that's
we're fronting all the time.
Yeah.
I'm taking it. So anyway, we get a lot of these too. This one is called account deactivation.
Ah.
And
Yeah,
well, no offense, but will you please delete my account? Nothing to do with the site. I just do not have time to browse the web anymore.
Okay.
And a minor sidebar, but I've seen several things in Cosmic where people have asked to have their thing deleted, and I guess we just simply tell them, just don't log on, because we don't delete accounts, to my knowledge. Do we, Bill?
No. We don't. Well, what's the point? I mean, just stop coming.
Yeah, just don't log in and don't come on or whatever. Yeah, it's kind of funny. Yeah, it's like they feel like if they're not deleted, then automatically they're still on or something. I don't understand that mentality either.
Right. Here's one titled Website Suggestion.
Ah.
I hope you don't mind me contacting you unannounced. I'll cut straight to the point. You and I can both make a lot of money by putting online poker on your site. Please contact me.
Golly.
Here's another one. Now, in the same line, and I think maybe I probably should have just forwarded this one to Steven. I'm sure this would have been right up his alley. The title of this one is Setting Up a Phone Sex Business, and it's as if it's a template.
Oh, wow.
You and I can make lots of cash by launching a phone sex business from your very, very popular, very, very twice and popular twice website.
Hmm.
Now, that's an interesting Ways and Means project.
Yeah, forward that one to Dave Rabbit. He might be using that one soon.
Maybe Dave will want that one, too.
Use it from the Saigon internet account.
Here's another one that confuses me, just like that advertising query confuses me. Very simple email titled Owners. Hi, who owns this website?
The owners.
Again, something that's linked on every damn page of the site.
Wow.
Here's another one. This place is a joke. Please remove me from this fake site as soon as possible. I don't want to come to it anymore.
And I guess if we don't remove them, then they'll be
forced.
He's going
to keep coming until we remove him.
Yeah, coming, yes.
Sure. Of course.
He'll show us. He'll keep coming until we remove him.
That's right.
He's going to punish us.
Here's one that I actually exchanged a couple emails with this guy, and I just finally had to give up because it was absolutely hopeless. He decided to contact us. I'm not sure why, because he was complaining that he gets the same error on lots of websites. It's just that he visits us most, so he gets this this problem from us more because he comes to our site more than others. And right. it's an antivirus alert that pops up quite a bit for him. And the IP address of the alert of the attacking computer that is sending the virus to him is 127.0.0.1.
What the hell is that?
Well, if anyone knows anything about IP addresses, that's the IP address of the of your computer.
Of your computer, yes.
I sent him links that describe that. That's the localhost IP address. Everybody's computer
it's
has
a default,
that IP address.
Yeah, it's a default address.
And he just didn't understand, and he was getting really upset that I was trying to. Yeah.
I wonder if that has something to do with cookies also.
Well, funny you should say. We have another ATS contact. Well, what a great segue.
Thank you.
You are the spyware whores of the universe. Every time I visit ATS, my computer gets 10 to 15 spyware cookies loaded on my computer. 10 to 15. Wow, that's just terrible. I mean, it's just cookies, people. I mean, oh, boy. It amazes me why these ultra-paranoid... I mean, there's good reason to be paranoid about viruses on your computer, but once people install these scanners and crappy pieces of software that alert you to every possible thing happening, they categorize cookies as something bad. And I've in my entire time being on the internet, which means I've been on the internet since there was an internet and since cookies started, I've never deleted cookies.
What kills me are the people that think that they can go into the advanced mode and they start deselecting or selecting certain modules in their configuration of their computer where one of them might be, please alert me if a server tries to send a cookie. And then every cookie or anything that is being sent, including a JavaScript or ActiveX control, you know, and it'll keep popping up. I swear, if you go to one website, you're going to have like 13 of those pop up that you have to say either agree or disagree or do not continue or whatever. It takes you like 15 minutes to see just the homepage show up.
Yeah, it's impossible to surf the web and stuff like that.
That's correct.
So we have a series of emails from somebody with a Comcast email address. He's identified himself as somewhere in the Pacific Northwest.
I was out of town.
Well, you might know this person, actually.
Okay.
He's continually complaining that two small, not, you know, I mean, it looks like there's two people in helicopters, are buzzing his neighborhood and specifically his house.
Oh.
And we've had a series of emails from this guy who's getting increasingly complex that we aren't making them stop.
You know what? This actually rings a bell. Does this guy claim to be a skywasher?
Skywasher?
Yes. He washes the sky for 12
Luke
bucks.
Skywasher?
Yes. Does he claim to be a skywatcher at all?
No, he's just expecting us to make them stop.
Oh, I got it. So we've got connections.
I already emailed you once to make them stop. Why aren't you making them stop?
This is my third email.
The helicopters are still happening. It's that kind of thing.
I'm going to get right on the phone on that one.
Hey, speaking about getting right on the phone, not to do a sidebar, but I am. I just noticed on the site that we're at had just broken the 2400 mark. We're 2395 on the Quantcast.
We were a bit lower Friday. We're probably going to get I can't imagine what's going to happen next week as the election hits.
Oh, man, is it going to be fun? A thrill ride.
We have another series of increasingly irritated emails from someone with a psychic readings website who charges $1 for tarot readings. Wanting a link exchange.
Mm-hmm.
And email came in later that upset that we didn't want to exchange links with him. Then another email came in later, apparently the same person, but although the email address did change, but it seemed to reference previous emails, that he put a link on his website to us. And did we lose somebody there?
No.
No. We're here.
Oh, I heard a whoop from Skype.
You did? You hit heard a whoop?
Yeah. Huh. Is Johnny there?
Hi, how are you? Waka waka.
Waka.
There he is.
Waka.
Yeah, see, we're... Anyway, well, that's probably the FBI chiming in and listening as
They always listen to us. They love our show.
And he put a link to us on his website, and so that we can go ahead and put a link to him. And then a little bit later, he's now going to sue us for not putting a link to him because he put a link to us.
Well, if they're psychic, they should be able to know what the turnout or how it's going to turn out.
That's just it. He should have known that we weren't going to link to
Yes.
him. That's what gets me really confused about this.
And speaking of psychics, that always kind of bothered me when I would go by the bulletin boards or something by the universities, and there would be these posters up for the psychic fairs. Don't you think that if you're going to be showing up, you'd already know when the date and the time is?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, you should know these things.
Yes.
And so that's the confusing part. Now, here's a contact email that's apparently directed at you guys.
Uh-oh.
Oh, no. Okay.
Yeah, it says, your audio on your podcast is annoying the crap out of me. Heavy breathing and the such. Could you all get your act together? Heavy breathing.
I think they're probably talking about a podcast from one of our fellow brotherly podcasters.
He's talking about Martin.
Yeah, well, I wasn't going to say any names. Thanks, Dave.
Martin. Well, Martin knows it's true. Martin was having Martin Bain, our beloved guy over there at the Above Politics show, was having some microphone problems. And yeah, you could hear him breathe. That's who he's talking about. It's not us. We don't breathe.
That's right. All right. Any other hate mail, Bill?
Well, here's one from somebody who's is titled, "My threads are constantly getting deleted." I'm trying to post something with regard to Obama, Hussein Obama, and the presidency, and my threads are constantly being deleted.
Obviously, somebody that has not read the T's. And
the moderator said I was flooding the site with spam, but I only posted it 12 times in 12 different forms.
Oh, well, I can't understand why.
He says there was no ill intent for so many posts. I just wanted to get the word out.
Of course. Of course.
Oh, sure.
My Lord.
It makes complete sense. So now here's one that is completely out of the blue, and we'll wrap things up with this. This is a guy with a I can't say what kind of site it is, because even describing the site, well, I need to give this link to Steven, and he'll probably enjoy it. But the subject of the thread is, you need to change your link to me, and all it is a URL. Change the link you have to this one. And the URL, even the URL is dirty.
Ah.
The
you
URL.
Mean, you mean the name of the address itself is spelt dirty.
It has something to do with devices used in a what shall we say
bondage?
Inappropriate manner. I'm sure there's some of that.
Okay.
I got one question. I know we're running a little bit long, but I just got one question. What about this thread, the mainstream media's picture Candace based on advertising budgets?
Yeah, that's been we exchanged a couple emails on that. That's been haunting me these past couple weeks. It's a thread that's from back in August by Mr. Old School.
Yeah, I saw that.
At the time, it was, you know, we were still discussing the campaign prior to the conventions. And he did an excellent job based on sort of took the work someone else did, looking at the Google Trends, and got a little bit more, actually a lot more granular, and tracked the positive mention of the candidates in news media to articles about their rise in fundraising. And it's an interesting spike per spike comparison, where a candidate has a news or a press release where they have reached a new fundraising goal, or it's clear that they have fundraising, they get a spike in the media coverage. Candidates that don't have any fundraising don't have any spikes. Candidates that have the biggest fundraising press releases, such as Hillary and Obama, they got big spikes in the media. And the connection being made is that the news media is giving more and more favorable coverage to the candidates that have raised the most money.
Right.
And we're seeing that even now. I mean, the Pew report and a couple other reports came out there is that Obama is getting, you know, a disproportionate amount of positive coverage in the news media as compared to McCain. Now, there's probably some pretty good reasons, too, where the McCain campaign just outright sucks. But still, it's disproportionate amount of coverage. And it's and every time there's a story or a release from the Obama campaign, and I started following Google Trends, there was an announcement about 3 weeks ago that they reached a new milestone in fundraising, and boom, there's a peak in news coverage and a corresponding peak in Google searches. And there's no corresponding peak for McCain. In fact, there's a bit of a valley at the same time in news coverage.
Well, you know, coming up this Tuesday, November 4th, is the election for the new president of the United States. And I'll tell you, it's really going to be interesting. It's going to be a wild ride, even though I think Obama's going to win it with no problem. I still think it's going to be a wild ride.
I have this feeling, you know, I was firmly in the camp of, oh, this ain't right, back in 2000. I think we talked about the movie Recount a couple podcasts ago. With the 2000 election, what happened in Florida, I have a sneaky feeling we're going to see the McCain campaign calling for recounts in three states.
Do you really?
That's what I'm saying, three swing states.
Like what? Pennsylvania, Ohio, and what? Florida?
I'm thinking Virginia, West Virginia, Pennsylvania, and Ohio.
You think they'll do a recount even if it's not close?
I think it's going to be close.
Close? What do you mean? How close are you saying close? 100,000 votes? Is that close?
I think close enough in those three states, each of those three states, for a similar situation that we saw in Florida.
Man, that just bugs the crap out of me, you know?
Well, we're seeing already in Ohio and West Virginia, now Pennsylvania, stories of votes flipping on the machines.
Yes.
In the early voting.
Yeah, I saw those. I saw notes on
and,
that.
And there's a YouTube video of the guy, and I believe it's in Pennsylvania, showing the news media the machine and how it's just a mere calibration error. He shows how the screen is off. Is not properly calibrated. You know, I've calibrated touchscreens. I've built touchscreen interface systems back in the late 90s, so I know what's involved in calibrating a touchscreen, and it's way off. I mean, we're talking like 3 inches apart as far as the two buttons on the touchscreen. It's not just a matter of touching McCain, Obama, and McCain below getting checked. It's right. Touching Obama at the top, and McCain is five below getting checked. It's a really weird thing. And then if you hit all Democrat, all Republican gets checked, and it's on the complete other side of the screen. It's not a shift in improper calibration. So then he plugs in this little calibration device.
Yeah.
And it calibrates the machine. He unplugs it. He goes through a couple of votes showing how, okay, now that it's calibrated, it's working correctly. He goes to the third. He shows it a third time. And it's off calibration again. And it's going to be scary.
That aggravates the crap out of me. You know, Christ, last time the go-around and the Florida thing, the disaster, the chats or chaffs or whatever the hell it was.
And the dimpled chads and all that. Yeah. And that's the other problem, too, with the big fight over those dimpled chads. What people found out after the fact, after the big fight was over, is a lot of the machines in those poorer counties hadn't had their chad emptied in years. So no matter how hard you pushed down, right, you got a dimpled chad because you couldn't push it through.
Well, you know what I've always said. If you never had a dimpled chad, you don't know how it feels.
But I'm bump. How did I know you were going to do something like that?
I don't know. Clairvoyance?
I don't know. Well, listen, we've certainly enjoyed this different segment of this Skeptic Overview. Kind of a different thing.
All right, Bill. Listen, talking about soldiering on, brother, we really appreciate you coming on air. And are we going to try to – I think we're going to try to get together right after the election for your next segment, are we not? And kind of do our own analyzation of what transpired?
Even if it means we launch the podcast a day late, I think it's worth giving time to make sure we cover what's happening on ATS from an election standpoint.
Yeah, so we'll actually be the first show that'll put it on the feeds because the other two will already have done them.
Okay, great.
All right, great. So let's count on doing that.
Sounds good.
All right. Have a good evening, Bill.
You too. Have a blast.
Talk to you soon.
Thanks, Bill.
Bye. All right, there you go with the Skeptic Overlord and the kind of a weird Overlord show, wasn't it, John?
No, and it wasn't that weird. Actually, I was highly entertained by it.
Well, actually, you know, I really enjoyed the letters, especially the ones where he was spelling them G-U-D. Good
from the college student that wanted to have the project. You guys. Yeah, that's good stuff.
Sounds like a mafia movie, doesn't it? Use guys?
Use guys? Use guys? Yeah, forget about it, you guys.
Forget about it. Forget about it.
All right, this is getting silly.
It is getting silly. So, and besides, I'm getting distracted by watching TMZ because we're doing this kind of late night and seeing all the little hot. Tracy Benjamin, who is that?
Have you? Ever I don't heard know, of her? But say goodnight, Dave.
Goodnight, Dave.
ATS Mix from AboveTopSecret.com is over.
You've been listening to the ATS Mix with Dave Rabbit and Johnny Anonymous. If you have a comment, suggestion, an opposing view, or would like to participate in a future show of ATS Mix, please contact Dave or Johnny at www.abovetopsecret.com. The views expressed on ATS Mix do not necessarily reflect those of the staff and management of the Above Network, LLC, or any of its affiliates. Thanks for listening. You may now reattach your tinfoil hat.